Mark chapter 5, we've been looking at the first 13 verses, dealing with particularly the healing of the man of Gennesaret, man with the evil spirits, the spirits, when Jesus asked who they were, identified themselves as legion, that there were many of them. And I think we've discussed a lot there, but the story doesn't end on verse 13. Rather, it picks up in verse 14, says, those tending the pigs ran off and reported this into the town. What did they report in town? Yeah, 2,000 pigs went over the cliff. They're dead. They reported that into the town and in the countryside. You think they were evangelists?
They were spreading a message.
They were spreading a message, true, yeah. Really wasn't the good news, was it? But sometimes some of the characteristics they had could be kind of termed almost as evangelistic with the zeal that they reported what happened. When they came to Jesus, now that's the townspeople, when they came to Jesus and they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there dressed and in his right mind, they were afraid. Those who had seen it told the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man, and told about the pigs as well. And the people began to plead with Jesus to leave their region. I want to take just a few minutes and look at this thought here. There are several thoughts here. That the demon-possessed, the man who was possessed by fear, loneliness, guilt, meaninglessness, because that's what he was. He had no meaning in his life as he was demon-possessed. He was, what, excommunicated from the town? He was driven out. Where was he living? In the tombs. He was living in the tombs, sleeping on the graves. So, I would say a definition of a meaningless life would be pretty plain. But Jesus acted. Jesus repossessed the man for God. In the presence of Jesus, evil was subdued. Verse 6. But you notice this man, there's for a lesson to be a simple thought of three C's. In the man we see choice, confession, and commitment. Choice, confession, commitment. What was his choice?
At which time, after he was in his right mind, or?
And that's a legitimate question. That's a legitimate question. Was the choice could be identified in his right mind, or as he recognized Jesus? I think it's as he recognized Jesus and came to him, and fell at Jesus' feet. He submitted himself. He made a commitment. What was the other one? Confession. We've been speaking about confession for the last month, I think, in the bulletin, and trying to make sure that we leave that thought that confession is just one of those five steps of conversion that, what was it? We hear, believe, repent, confess, and are baptized. Because I don't think confession ends at the baptistry. Rather, as we've illustrated, I think, in the bulletin in the last couple of weeks, it is a lifelong commitment. So that speaking the same as God, speaking the same as God for what is holy and what is impure, speaking the same as God is the penalty for sin. Speaking the same for God of His love and His mercy. All that has confession wrapped in. But want to look at all these folks here. We've got several different groups of people. The neighbors have come running out, not the evangelistic or the evangelistic is people spreading good news. What is people spreading bad news? Busybodies, gossip?
News people.
News people. Some won't subscribe to that, I'm sure.
They weren't busybodies or trying to spread rumors. They were going and reporting to their bosses what had happened, the people that owned the pigs. That's what they should have done.
If you were the one that was taking care of those pigs, and your charge suddenly was killed, whose head's on the block? Let's get out of thinking about the bacon. Somebody's in the fat, right? Whatever their ambitions, but when they started sharing more, perhaps maybe then we got into a busy party pot. Look at these people. They hear the news. They come running out to see what happened. Here at the edge of the cliff are their pigs. And there's Jesus. His band of 12 men around him. And there's the man who is crazy sitting at his feet in his right mind. What kind of a reaction would those people have? Whoa, what happened here? What happened? Right, Rita. They told Jesus, get away from here. We don't want anything to do with you. Back. Out. They were what? They were afraid of him. We'd spend some time looking at the neighbors.
Jack.
Sir.
I don't think they were necessarily afraid of him. He just cost them a lot of money and they wanted to get rid of him. These were business people.
And I think you're right to a degree, but
they didn't want to have any more. Yeah, there were people that were afraid, but I think the people that owned the sheep, or the swine just wanted him gone before it cost them anything else.
That was a big chunk out of their wallet, wasn't it? Out of their livelihood.
2,000 pigs is a lot.
2,000 pigs would be a bit. Your question?
So it's a twofold answer. It could be either or.
I think that there was definitely a money issue involved, as David was pointing out. But Mark, through the inspiration, says they were afraid. So I think they're both going there together. They didn't want Jesus there. Whether it's just for fear of the pocketbook or the fear of themselves, for their own livelihood, for their lives, they were afraid of him, or what he could do. Yes, this is a good place to stop and ask. When you hear of good fortune coming to someone, how do you react? There was a article in the paper about a month ago where two barbers here in Raytown bought a lottery ticket and won $1 million. That's great news. That one of our own citizens, somebody that perhaps maybe one of you have gone to the barber shop sometime or another, because they've been here in the Raytown area for 40 years, got a lottery ticket and won $1 million. Isn't that great news? How do we respond to news? Here is great news. The man that was mad as a hatter, that was so rough that chains couldn't keep him, that he tore it himself, he tore it in his clothing, he cut himself, he was totally uncontrollable, he was out of it. When they come, they see him sit in his right mind at the feet of Jesus. How do we deal with the good news? Sometimes I think it's easier for us, easier for me, to see the black cloud. The black cloud. We got 3.5 inches of rain at my house today. 3.5. That's on top of all the other rain that we've had last week. My toes are getting wet. I was talking to Kevin, and Kevin said he's got a trickle across his basement. It's causing problems. I got out with a hoe and tried to do some water shunting around the house on the outside. We've had rain. Do we look at the negative or do we look at the positive? Do we look at the man who has his life together, who has meaning, who has could have purpose? This man that was once raving mad, that's now in his calm mind? Or do we center on the bloodshed at the foot of the cliff? I don't know. But I think that's something that we have to wrestle each of us on how we deal with things. But there's another group I want to look at. Mark does not talk about this group of people. Mark does not mention them by name, but they were there. The 12 disciples. They saw, as they got out of the boat with Jesus, this wild man rushing at them with chains flying around, perhaps. Well, I don't know about you, but me, if I was there, I would be wanting to pick up one of the oars as I got out of the boat, in case I needed to add some gentle persuasion to this man. How do the disciples take in this event? What do you think?
Mark doesn't tell us.
Now remember, this event just happened after what other event? Chapter 4, verses 35, where Jesus had just spanked them, a good one, and told them what? Oh, ye of little faith! Where is your faith? Well, I think chapter 5 is so big and important, because here we're seeing faith in action. Well, there's one last thing, last thought here about the man. And we've talked a bit about what is madness. We looked at the Hebrew definition of madness, walking abroad at night, spending the night on a grave, tearing one's clothes, destroying what one is given, are all indications. As Jesus was getting back into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. Jesus said, no. Jesus said, go home to your family and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how much he has shown mercy for you. Where was his home? I can't say the word. Okay. We're going to find in chapter 7 through chapter 9, when Jesus returns to this location, the mind of the people is going to be changed. They're going to be open to Jesus, to his teachings. They're going to be open to Jesus being there. Wonder what's changed between chapter 5 and chapter 7. No one thing has changed. I think somebody went home. I think somebody went home and said, honey, I'm home. Before, I couldn't step my foot in the city. Before, I lived among the graves. I'm home. And here's the man that did it to me. Here's the man that showed mercy. I think that's what set the stage for the change of mind between chapter 5 and chapter 7. The events I'm talking about is chapter 7, verse 31 through 8, verse 9. So the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him, and all the people were amazed. Here is an evangelist. Here is an evangelist. Does he know the whole story? Does he know the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ? Does he know that Jesus is the Son of God? He knows what the demon said to Jesus. He knows that Jesus made him well. Jesus showed him mercy. And he told the people what had happened. And the result was an evangelist was made. Comments on this event? Let's go ahead then and look at chapter 5, verses 21 to 34. I'm sorry, Sherry?
I think one thing that is common to us as well as to them is that we don't like change. We were used to the guy who was out at the tombs who was acting crazy and the people that raised pigs around us. And that's what we were used to. And Jesus changed that. And at the time, they didn't like change. And a lot of people today, if you go in and you tell them the story of Jesus and how their sins are forgiven, they didn't feel guilty before you came and told them about that. And they don't like it. It's a change. And sometimes Jesus said we sow the seed, but God gives the increase. We don't always see the increase because it might happen later down the road. But sowing the seed presents a change. And that's what these people had. They had a change that they weren't used to.
Like an observation. You know, as long as there was a crazy man around about, if anything went bad, we'd always blame it on him, right?
They were used to it.
Yeah, used to it. So, definitely Jesus brought in a change, or an event. Well, let's look what happens. Verse 21. When Jesus had crossed over again by boat to the other side of the lake, a large crowd gathered around him. Now, this is not like the crowd that he just left, but the man at the lake. Then one of the synagogue, one of the rulers, named Jairus, came there. Seeing Jesus, he fell at his feet and pleaded earnestly with him. "My little daughter is dying. Please come and put your hands on her so that she will be healed and live." So Jesus went with him. A large crowd followed and pressed round him. A woman who was there, who had been subject to bleeding for 12 years, she had suffered a great deal under the care of many doctors and spent all that she had. Yet, instead of getting better, she grew worse. When she heard about Jesus, she came up behind him in the crowd and touched his cloak, because she thought, "If I just touch his clothes, I will be healed." Immediately, her bleeding stopped, and she felt it in her body, that she was freed from her suffering. And at once, Jesus realized that power had gone out from him. He turned around in the crowd and asked, "Who touched my clothes?" "You see people crowding around against you," his disciples answered. "And yet you ask, 'Who touched me?'" But Jesus kept looking around to see who had done it. Then the woman, knowing what had happened to her, came and fell at his feet, and trembling with fear, told him the whole truth. He said to her, "Daughter, your faith has healed you. Go in peace and be free from your suffering." While Jesus was yet speaking, let's stop there. For verse 34. There's several things that I think that's significant here. One is, as we just pointed out, Jesus is now at a more receptive crowd. Jesus is now being sought out instead of trying to be run off. Here's Jairus. Now, I mentioned Jairus once before when we talked last week about faith. So I want to compare the faith of Jairus with the faith of Abraham. The faith of Jairus, who has a daughter that is sick, with Genesis chapter 22 and the faith of Abraham. Abraham we hold up in high esteem because he took his son to a mountain which God had appointed, and there he proceeded to build an altar, to place the wood upon that altar, and prepared to kill his son, as God had directed. That's faith. Because Abraham believed that from one of these stones, God would fulfill his promise, that his descendants would rise up after him. The promise that was given back all the way in chapter 12, verses 1 through 3, and verse 7, that through his seed all nations of the earth would be blessed. He knew God would keep that promise. What did Jairus know? What about his faith? Daughter's sick. Jesus healed a bunch of folks. So he goes to the healer. And while he's going to the healer, he's interrupted. I don't deal good with interruptions. Do you deal good with interruptions? Kevin, you're a teacher. You're teaching your class, and there's Ed's off over there, and he is just ready to interrupt. How do you deal with that? Well, doesn't happen very often, you say. Here is a man that is on a mission of mercy. The mercy is trying to get aid for his daughter, and somebody stops him, the healer, from going to do his duty. I think that's something to think about, something for us to look at. Mark does not record, neither do any of the others, any type of resentment from him. But we're going to see when Jairus gets home, the house is filled with mourners, aren't they? The house is filled with mourners. Jesus asks, "What is all this racket?" And they tell him that the girl is dead. My mind, if I were Jairus, I'd say, she wouldn't be dead if that woman hadn't stopped him. If she hadn't been in the way, if she hadn't stopped Jesus, the healer would have taken care of it. I'd have been bitter. But Jesus takes mom and dad in, along with three of the apostles. He says, she's not dead, she's just asleep. The people knew that she was dead because the professional wailers were already called in. Those who mourned on a professional scale, they saw death. Jesus healed her. There's something more for us to think about as we look at this event. There's the discussion there of the woman, and I thought it was rather interesting. According to Greek tradition, which kind of embellishes on this account, they've given the woman a name. They call her Berenice. Berenice. But the Coptic and the Latin tradition names her Veronica. I don't know enough about names to know the significance there, but they personalize this person. But what I find interesting is that she had some faith too, didn't she? If I but just touch his clothing, she reached out to touch him. Well, there was, according to historical records, there were several different cures. Mark says that she had gone through doctors until she had run out of money. Seems to me like that's a curse of getting older. The older you get, the more doctors you see. I hope I'm wrong.
You're not.
I may find myself like this woman after a course of events where I do everything I can until I run out of money. But I thought I'd just share with you some of the cures that are the Hebrew cures of blood loss. Take a goblet of wine containing a powder compounded with rubber, alum, and garden crocuses. Did I say the word right? Crocuses? The flowers? And let the person drink that. Now maybe the alum and the rubber have healing properties? I don't know. Another application or remedy, if you will, is a dose of Persian onions cooked in wine accompanied by incantations.
Hebrew?
That was a Hebrew remedy. And just like with hiccups, there was another theory. And what is one of the theories of hiccups? How to cure hiccups?
Hold your breath.
Hold your breath? No, that's one I was thinking of. Scare them! Scare them! Scare this woman! She'll get better! Scare her! She'll stop bleeding! Well, and then there was the mystical curing the ash of an ostrich egg in a certain cloth. I don't know. I just can imagine knowing that there's these theories running around, these remedies, what this woman must have been subjected to. Well, we'll leave that with you today. We'll finish up with Jairus, this woman, Jesus, Lord willing, next week. Any other thoughts before we can... Corrections?
All of those people had... Jesus said their faith saved them, healed them. But like James says, faith without works is dead. They had to do something. If the woman said, I know Jesus can heal me, but never did anything about it.
If either one of them had not gone to Jesus, had not performed some kind of a work on their part, they would have never been healed. Believing is one thing, but actually going to Jesus and committing yourself to him is a different thing. That's the work that James is talking about, that you have to have with the faith to make it whole.
Thank you.
Along that same line, when the woman touched the hem, Jesus felt a power issue through him. So we know that it wasn't him intentionally doing something. Evidently, some combination of either her mental state or something had let God or the Holy Spirit know that now is the time to release this power and heal this woman. So she, being in the right frame of mind or the right circumstances, she enabled this to come to her. And as Jesus said, woman, your faith has healed you.
Thank you. That's one of the things we'll be looking at, Lord willing, next week is unintentional healing. And that's a nice phrase. Anything else before we close?